Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, John Boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
I usually am optimistic, right? That's not necessarily a surprise on your part, right?
MLB Network Insider.
That's an excellent thought there.
John, all of my questions are excellent, okay?
What is baseball going to do to enforce those rules?
That is a great question. Again, another great one, because they're all great.
Fox Sports Baseball contributor. Yeah.
Fox Sports Baseball God. John Paul Morosi.
I'm a god. I'm not the god.
John Morosi.
How about this for a homecoming?
With McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Our MLB insider from MLB Network and Fox Sports joins us throughout the baseball season by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park, and he always makes us feel better about the questions that we ask. JP, how you doing today, my friend?
That's a great open, my friends. That's well done. I was very impressed by that. Great job by everybody putting that together, and great job by both of you, as always, asking the great questions that you do.
Oh, you make us feel so good. You know what else is making us feel good lately, John, is watching our local baseball teams. Let's start with the White Sox, who tonight go for their seventh straight win. And granted, they've had the Royals for a handful of those games, but they are going terrific. The question we all have is, man, what are they going to do about the absence of quality starting pitching? Is it too early for us to start talking about which guys Rick Hahn might be able to go get to fortify that rotation?
It's never too early to talk about that, especially once you're under 4 weeks to the trade deadline. So if you think of a normal year, we're at basically the 4th of July right now in terms of a July 31 deadline. And by then, we're always talking about who is out there. I think I'll say this as a first point. The general uncertainty about the season, I think, makes it harder to strike a deal on both sides. Any contending team, as we've seen with the Cardinals over the last week, is one COVID-19 outbreak away from your season being in tremendous jeopardy, and the entire enterprise itself is obviously tenuous day-to-day as well. So amid uncertainty, deals are harder to make. I make that statement number one. However, there are some teams that I believe are going to be sellers that have pitching to give. I think the Royals in the AL Central with Danny Duffy, he is signed through 2021, so there would still be some money to be worked out there. I think he is a possibility to mention. The Rangers, if they keep having kind of a slow start to their year, they've got Mike Minor, who's going to be a free agent after this year. I would say he is someone who's going to likely be available. Matt Shoemaker with the Jays. Robbie Ray off to a slow start with the Diamondbacks, but he is a really promising arm. And then I would look at the Giants with Kevin Gausman, free agent after the season is over. And finally, the Orioles. Tommy Malone, a name that we know well from years ago with the Twins and the AL Central and then Oakland, he's a guy that I think as a free agent when the season is over is someone who's being looked upon as a possible trade piece as well. So I think the names are going to be out there. Not maybe the Zach Greinke type from last year. It's just not that kind of a season. But if the need is for help, and for someone to slot in behind the likes of Giolito and Keuchel, I think someone who's a number three type starter will certainly be available to the White Sox before August 31.
Have you been impressed with the White Sox start?
I have been. I totally have been. And I think I'll make this point, too, sort of big picture on both teams. If you look at Fangraphs.com, which is usually pretty good about calculating postseason odds and realizing that we've got eight teams making the playoffs in each league this year, which is unique, the White Sox right now, 85%, the Cubs, 94%. So the first time probably since 08, I realize it's uncertain and unprecedented times, but first time since 08 that both teams have a great chance to be in there. So I think that's a pretty intriguing storyline for Chicago baseball overall. But I think the way the White Sox have played, when you consider the fact that there have been those questions on the rotation, and really you'd probably say two starters off to a very good start, but the offense has just been that exciting. And as advertised, I think in so many ways, Robert has been the guy that we thought he was. Jimenez has looked fantastic. Moncada has come back and looked fantastic. I think Abreu really validating the decision to bring him back and extend him, of course. I think even Lourdes Garcia has had a very good start offensively. So this team has been, I think, one of the great offenses in baseball, one of the great stories in baseball, and if they get just enough pitching, this team is dangerous, I think, going down the stretch and into the postseason as well.
Do you think they can be the best offensive team in the major leagues?
I do. Now, the Yankees are obviously outstanding right now as well, and they've got Judge and Stanton, but I really think that overall, 1 through 9, and we'll see, of course, with Madrigal's injury here and when he's able to come back, and maybe that means more starts for Mendick there in the infield. But I think that it's 1 through 9, probably the deepest lineup in the American League right now. I think when you really look at it that way and how many runs they're going to be able to score at different spots, and it's not just the power, but it's the athleticism, too. It's the ability to steal bases, run the bases. This is a very fundamentally sound team that I love watching them play. I think the quality of their at-bats is there, and just the excitement. If I'm a pitcher right now, there are no soft spots in this lineup that I can just let up a little bit and feel comfortable and ease into an at-bat. I mean, I am basically fearful of being taken deep from the very first pitch of the game, and there's no real let-up in that. And I think those are the lineups that I think back to the Texas lineups a decade ago when they had Nelson Cruz batting seventh. It's maybe not quite to that extent yet, but it's got the makings of a lineup that just really terrifies you from pitch one when you're on the opposite side, and I think that's the kind of club that's going to take a real toll on their opponents all season long.
Just to circle back to the trade stuff for a minute, you mentioned all of those pitchers, and you mentioned the difficulty of the market. Can you just lay it out for the audience why both ways, buyers and sellers, you think there are going to be so few trades this year?
Right. I just think that if I'm a buyer, for example, will I give up the prospect package that I believe that I need to give up to get an A-level player, for example, when day-to-day, week-to-week, you're not totally sure that the playoffs will happen? I am still, as we talked about in the open, I'm an optimist, and I think that it will happen. I think that the fact that the league is still going right now is a pretty good data point that even while you've had two teams with outbreaks, you're still playing. I think that's a pretty reassuring note that they're going to keep trying to find ways to play and hopefully do so safely. But I think when you don't know, when you have uncertainty about exactly what you're buying, and I think on the same token, on the opposite side, exactly what you're giving up, and also the expanded playoffs means that the decision to be a seller is going to be harder to make. You're going to have to be a club, as I mentioned, the Orioles, the Giants, the Royals, who were already realizing this year they were probably not going to be in the playoffs. You have to sort of be one of those teams and also off to a not great start to make yourself even comfortable doing a deal like that. And even as we speak, the Orioles are right around 500, so it's which puts them in the mix for a playoff berth. So it's a really unique year. I think that the added playoff spots makes it harder to punt on the season, and similarly, just the overall uncertainty of spending a top prospect to get a top player without knowing that even the playoffs are going to happen fully, I think makes you a little bit reluctant, which is why I really think for the White Sox purposes, if what you're shopping for is a third starter, I think you'll be able to get a third starter. I'm a little more skeptical on a number one starter, but a third starter, those names will be out there, and the White Sox, as we know, have plenty of prospect currency still, even with the guys that have graduated to the major leagues. They still have enough prospect currency, I believe, to make a very impactful trade.
Craig Kimbrell did it again last night for the Cubs. David Ross quick to get him out of there, and they survive another Kimbrellian performance. We don't expect him to get a ball in a high leverage situation anytime soon. Do they have somebody on the staff you believe in who can emerge as a quality closer?
I think Roland Wick has been very solid so far. Now, certainly, and Jeffress has done the job before. He's been an all-star player before, Jeremy Jeffress. I think Kyle Ryan has shown a lot. I think Ryan is ideally probably more of a seventh or eighth inning guy. He can face righties and lefties as a left-hander, and especially in this day and age with the three-batter minimum, I think Ryan is probably more optimal for the seventh or eighth inning. So I would say Roland Wick will get a chance. He's already had two saves. Jeffress has picked up a save as well. But I think you're right with Kimbrel. I've got to credit David Ross. To have a closer of that stature, of that salary, struggle and yet not have it cost your club games, really, is a pretty remarkable feat. And I think it's the right level of David Ross giving Craig an opportunity to try to work through things. Obviously, it hasn't been working out so far. And so I think to your point, maybe you pull back and give him a lower leverage situation to try to rebuild the confidence for Craig. But it's certainly a concerning development for the Cubs, no question about it. But I also think you could take a lot of comfort and confidence from the fact that it hasn't scuttled their season at this point in time, and they've actually been able to overcome it as a group, which is actually pretty impressive. So maybe they're a club that looks for one additional reliever, especially now with the rosters. Very importantly this week, we believe they'll stay up at 28 players. They'll come down from 30 to 28, but then stay there for the balance of the year. That means extra relievers, easier to trade for a reliever probably. It's one more dynamic there that we're seeing. And I think on the Cubs, a final note on the pitching from me at the moment is Chatwood's development, I think, has been outstanding. And the way that he has pitched has far exceeded my own expectations for him. He seems to be much more controlled in the strike zone. And I think Chatwood's development is probably one of the most important stories in the NL Central so far this year.
Speaking of the NL Central, Cubs the only team with a winning record. Is anyone else good?
The Reds, I mean, I've been high on them since the start. They've just been in a bit of a unique situation. Of course, they had Moustakas and Senzel both missing time in the COVID protocol without, according to reports, testing positive because they just had symptoms. So it's a very unique set of circumstances, of course, for the Reds. But I think their lineup depth is incredible. When they're healthy, when they're right, and you've got Votto in there with Moustakas and Castellanos, who's the reigning NL Player of the Week, I mean, that's a really interesting group of players, I think, with a tremendous amount of talent. So I still think the Reds are a team to be reckoned with. I look at their rotation, and Sonny Gray has been excellent, really, as advertised since the season began. Trevor Bauer's been great. So I think that's a team that I believe will make the playoffs, and they were my pick entering the season to win the division. But certainly right now you've got to love the way the Cubs are playing.
We're talking to John Morosi, MLB Network and Fox Sports. How close was baseball, if at all, to shutting down when the Cardinals outbreak happened?
I don't think very close. I really don't. And the commissioner had made the comments about how the ownership call was not really along those lines at all about shutting down the season. I think there is certainly concern. There's obviously concern. And I think the last couple of weeks have brought tremendous amounts of perspective and reality checks for both teams, whether it's the Marlins or Cardinals, but then, of course, the whole sport about what you have to do. You can be doing most, if not everything, the right way and still get infected. And that's frightening. And I think that the Cardinals players, you consider just the mental toll of effectively being quarantined, not even able to leave your hotel room for a period of time in Milwaukee. That's a legitimate worry and how they break out of it. We saw the Marlins come back and win last night. Pretty amazing what they have done. So I don't think, Danny, that it ever got close to a cancellation situation, although to me, it's clear with the commissioner's comments and even players. I saw Steven Souza Jr. make the same comments on Twitter, effectively, that we just have to be better. We have to be a little more strict about the protocols away from the ballpark. You're now under 2 months left in the regular season, which is, it's not a trivial amount of time, but we all just think about how fluid time has been here this year, and really that knowledge that you have to just really, really adhere to these protocols for the next 2 months, and then you kind of look around what the postseason is going to be. Will it be a one centralized city, whatever shape it will take? But I think it's really important for the players and for everybody involved in the sport, even those of us that are broadcasters at the ballpark. It's just we all have a certain amount of protocols that we have to abide by, and it's incumbent on all of us to do it. And I really don't think that they've gotten close to pulling the plug, although you have to realize that if this happens for multiple teams now in the weeks ahead, maybe it's a different conversation.
John, what grade do you give the commissioner for how he has handled this whole situation since they got restarted?
Well, I think this. There's been a lot of conversation back and forth about statements made and how things have gone. What I'll say is this. There's a majority of teams that have done an exceptional job of actually abiding by the protocols. The Cubs probably a number one top of the list. And so when you've got most of the clubs, and indeed a great majority of the clubs, passing tests and the positive test rate is down below 1%, I think that's all very good. I think that reflects well on Tony Clark with the union and reflects well with the commissioner. I think the one thing that I would say that collectively has to happen here is the notion of, and Ken Rosenthal wrote about this recently as well, we more than us and them, we more than we, you know, more than they, in terms of talking about the players. This is a collective effort that all has to be on the same page, and whatever can be done, whether it's behind the scenes or in public, to foster that sense of collective cause and support is really important, because the players, by and large, have done the right things, and I think that they should be commended for that, and I think that's really important for the league to show that appreciation, because without the players doing what they're doing right now, the industry doesn't really have a viable course for the balance of the year. And I think that's the one thing I would say is that going forward, that whether it's the CBA talks, labor relations, whatever it is, I think it's important to foster that sense of shared responsibility and appreciation and gratitude for what the players, by and large, have been doing right now.
What are the discussions about a bubbled postseason scenario?
I think they're underway right now. I don't have the particulars about where and when it's going to be, but to me, it seems quite clear that when you look at the success of the NHL and the NBA, I think it's very valid that MLB made the choice they made so far to be separate. I think that having the three different regions actually makes sense, and I'd point out that what we believe, at least, were the infections that have occurred with the Cardinals and Marlins were not really related to getting on the plane or getting on the bus, so to speak. It was other factors that would have been there if you were all in the same place no matter what. But I do think that because of weather, because of not knowing where potentially the COVID numbers will be in the fall, I think that centralized postseason is a concept that's being discussed. How far advanced the conversations are, I don't know. But I would be surprised if at least some element of the playoffs were not fully centralized. Just because once you get to that number of games, especially division series on, and you're in one central spot, I think it's a lot easier to say, okay, everybody come here. We don't have to play games all day long for 30 teams. It's now down to 8. I think once you're at that level, it's a lot easier to manage just what's going to be a very, very complicated and nuanced logistical challenge come October.
What are you hearing about when ballparks might start allowing a percentage of fans to trickle in?
That is a great question. You've asked many great questions today. It's another one. The idea was that later on, potentially in September, we could see it. I think part of the irony of that comes from the fact that the NFL, as you guys well know, there has never been a conversation there about, well, it's going to be no fans at all for the NFL. So you think about a city like Detroit, for example, where the ballpark is literally across the street from Ford Field, that you would have NFL fans potentially cross the street, but nobody at the ballpark. I think it's a dynamic situation. I would say that from a public relations standpoint, the time to talk about fans being in the ballpark is not when you've got multiple teams idled because of COVID or the team you're playing having COVID and you can't play. 20% of the league not being able to play over the weekend. Last weekend, that was not the time to talk about fans in the stands. But if we get 2 solid weeks, I would say, of very consistent good news on teams, I think then you could start talking about that. And what I would say there is, what I was told about the plan is that basically you would go to your local government officials, city, township, state, whatever it is, you would get all the governmental approvals, and then apply to the commissioner. So the commissioner would have the final say-so if you can allow fans into the ballpark, but he only hears that request after the relevant government officials have already signed off and approved on it. So it's a multi-step process, but I don't think it could start right now until you get a couple weeks of really solid, good, encouraging health data from the playing population as a starting point.
Interesting. John Morosi, MLB Network, but he is Mr. Hockey. What chances do you give the Hawks against the Oilers?
I tell you what, game two, McDavid's pretty good. I mean, and Draisaitl as well. But, I mean, to me, McDavid has been a star so far in this series. I've actually got the Oilers going pretty far. So I've got Edmonton winning the series, but was impressed with the game one win there by Chicago. So I still think overall the firepower of Edmonton, you got Draisaitl, McDavid, you got a Klefbom on the back end. It's a really, really good team. I think Edmonton wins the series.
John, as always, good stuff. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
Sounds great. Big Ten football schedule out today as well, guys. So lots to discuss there. Let's hope for good news there, too.
Do you think there's any shot of good news there? You're the eternal optimist, but can you convince yourself that will actually happen?
I'm going to say let's hope for good news, but I also you know where I live. I mean, I'm also like very wary of all these students coming back to town from all around the world, all around the country. I'm nervous. I think fundamentally NCAA football is a different proposition than pro baseball. And I think baseball, where we have seen challenges, baseball is still easier to pull off than college football.
That is accurate. John Morosi, as always, thanks, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Take care, John.
John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports. He lives in Ann Arbor. So, yeah, he is. He's got a vested interest in college football, but maybe not exactly this year. Speaking of college football, we'll talk to our guy, Teddy Greenstein. He's been doing a lot of reporting. Actually spoke to the commissioner of the Big Ten. So he'll join us coming up in about 40 minutes. So he named some names for the White Sox to potentially target. I'll throw out a name to part with, and I wonder, I'll run it past Tanny and you about whether or not you would be willing to do that. And I got a suggestion for the Marquee Sports Network as we continue to talk baseball. It's Mac and Parkinson.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Score.
Swinging and a drive into left center, deep warning track, and this one is going to get out of here, and the White Sox have tied the game. Eloy Jimenez hits a two-run shot against Brandon Woodruff.
This is a very prolific offense. Jimenez, one of the principals in the deal with the Chicago Cubs to get Jose Quintana. I think the Cubs are going to come out of that deal maybe regretting giving up a guy like Jimenez and Dylan Cease.
I'll tell you what, he's looked good here in Cease, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. You think we're going to regret that one, Mac? I certainly do.
Yeah.
Welcome. Thanks, Cubs.
Harry Doyle.
Yes. Bob Uecker. How much time have you been spending with Uke, Tanny, during these Brewers-Sox games?
A considerable amount of time. I've listened to the entire game the past two nights with Uke and Jeffrey Levering. They do a nice broadcast there, and Uke still got it, and he's still funny, and been doing lots of yard work too, like Mac. So you know, putting the MLB at bat app on and popping on Uke, it's a good call. So I don't know if I'll do it again tonight, but why not? It's working so far. So
wow, yeah,
there you go.
Even when he's getting mentions on White Sox television, he's out there expanding his tentacles and consuming Brewers broadcast. That's impressive. When I get my name mentioned, man, I lock into that crew for the next few weeks. It's like, hey, they may mention me again.
Well, it's one mention in my entire career, so I think I'm probably due to check out for a while. I don't think I'll be missing another one anytime soon.
Stocked up for a bit, are you?
Yeah.
Did it make it less special when last night Benetti also mentioned Dan Bernstein?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just saying, because you know Benetti's a fan of the score, so he'll name drop any of us at a given time, which is awesome. But yeah, so Tanny got it
in the seventh inning.
Yeah, you got a left-hander in the pen, and you're not going to go to the left-hander against Deloitte. But they probably want to avoid a first pitch slider after the last one wound up over 420 feet away.
But if you throw first pitch fastball, does he know that you want to avoid first pitch slider and he's looking first pitch fastball?
Sounds like Princess Bride. You put the poison nuts.
We got to get Dan Bernstein to do his impersonation. It's top notch.
Yes, it is top notch. That's well done, though.
Jason, better be careful. There's been a history. Some of the guys who've been the suits at that particular operation have not been too kind to sports radio mentions by name in the past. I don't know how the current staff treat it over there, but I know that's been the case in past regimes.
That's why I got so much a kick out of my mention, because the Hawk, whenever he would mention Dan and Terry, you'd get that feeling in your stomach, like, oh no, what do we do now? Uh-huh. How do we offend Hawk this time? So it's quite a different relationship now, which I appreciate. So, you know.
Chris Tannehill loves it more than anything in the world.
Yes, he does. Yes, he absolutely does. I can't imagine they have a problem with it. I mean, they've mentioned it so many times now that if they had a problem with it, it probably would have stopped by now, don't you think?
Yeah, you'd think so. Assuming that the neckties are listening.
Bernstein could just be a bridge too far for them. Like, that's it. Now you've gone too far, Benetti.
Well, yeah, I remember the one of my favorite Hawk when he once said, Mully's happy. I don't remember what the situation was, but Mully's happy became a score drop that played over and over again for the years.
It's good. Want Mully to be happy.
We do.
Yeah, of course.
That's interesting, because a logician would call that the post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy.
So relatable. As it pertains to the question of the White Sox and starting pitching. So John Morosi threw out some names.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what name, but he said there's probably not going to be a Zach Greinke A-list front line starter. But he said maybe guys who are free agents after this year or next year, three or four type starters. You know, he mentioned Lance Lynn, Danny Duffy. Mentioned a couple of other names, but remove the name from the equation. Just let's say it's a number three starter.
Gotcha.
Who you've got control of to make. Let's go to the high end of it. Let's say the rest of this year and next year. I will ask you, would you guys be willing to part with Andrew Vaughn for a player like that in a season like this? Because I think he's the top prospect now for the White Sox now that Robert Kopech and Madrigal have big league service time.
I had a feeling that would be the name you'd throw out there. And, boy.
24 years old.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 22 years old, first round pick, first baseman, absolutely
you don't
mashes.
Have anywhere to play him for the next couple years, really. I mean, you've committed to Jose Abreu. You have other guys on the team who are DHE.
Grandal can play over there. There's been talk in the past of Eloy moving. That certainly doesn't seem to be happening now.
Yeah, I probably would be inclined to pull the trigger on that.
Okay. Tanny, what about you?
That's a tough call, and I know when you're in your championship window, tough decisions have to be made. And Eloy, I believe, was the Cubs' top position prospect when they made the trade for him. So it's not like, you know, people aren't willing to make deals based on, you know, guys that are like, you know, 15 names deep on your top prospect list. That's not how the game works. You know,
as
I mean?
Was Gleyber Torres.
Right.
Theo did it twice.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that's sort of like that's the price of playing poker, right? That's what you have to do to make, you know. But what you're talking about for, you know, Torres for Chapman, though, this is a game changer. And, you know, Eloy for Quintana. I mean, that's a top-end starter there, as you can attest to. But, yeah, that's – I worry about the Sox future at the first base position once Abreu starts to slow down a bit because, you know, Grandal, Abreu, you're talking to guys that aren't necessarily young. And I think the best version of the White Sox is when Eloy is in the outfield for them, you know. And, you know, it, depending on who the name is, but any of those names that Morosi threw out there, I don't think so, you know, not this year. I think they still should be looking at how to improve for 2021 and beyond and not take a shot just for this year, even though every opportunity is sacred. We know that. But, you know, I'm not too hot for that. Not unless you're talking about a top end of the rotation type of guy.
Give me more, Tanny, on why you think Eloy is – why you think it's best for the White Sox that he plays left field versus DH or first base.
Well, if you're talking about, you know, your 10-year picture here, like Andrew Vaughn would be your first baseman, right? So, and you, in theory, you can, you know, keep switching out guys in the DH role, free agent acquisitions or what have you, but it gives you the opportunity to get more bats in the lineup. You know, that's why I always say that, because, you know, then all of a sudden you have a gaping hole in the outfield, and I don't think any of these outfield prospects that they've been grooming over the past few years have shown anything about stepping up, whether it be Mike Rodolfo, Blake Rutherford. I don't think you're going to see those guys enter in the picture in the next year or two. So that's why if you want to have this productive offense, as you do, Eloy Jimenez being out there and staying healthy in left field is your best option for the big picture.
Andrew Vaughn is an awesome hitting prospect. He could be your first baseman as soon as next year, right, yeah, when Encarnacion is gone, if they wanted to move Abreu into more of a full-time DH role. They'll probably always rotate the DH on some level, given the number of guys that you have, especially, like you said, with Grandal. You'll want his bat in the lineup when you're giving him a break behind the plate. So I picked the name because I think it's the toughest one. He's got such a high upside with the bat, but it's not a premium position. You have, obviously, a ton of offense. You're lacking starting pitching. And you don't know if Dylan Cease and Dane Dunning and right, Ronaldo Lopez, like you just don't know. Hey, you don't even know about Michael Kopech at this point, if they're going to hit. So I think I'd split the difference between the two of you and say I wouldn't do it for a rental, but if it was this year and next, so like if 3 weeks from now you were still 90% to make the playoffs because you kept playing well and the starting pitcher was able to be on this year's team and next year's team, I think that's when you would have to start looking at it for a number three pitcher. Not just for this year when the playoffs are expanded and it's a weird season and it can right, get shut down at any point. But if you would get a full extra season with him, I think you've got enough offensive surplus that would be something you'd have to consider. But it's got to be more than just 30 games or something like that this year.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. I'm not in love. Tanny's got me thinking about the future of the White Sox outfield now, because I just I still can't get my head around the idea of watching Eloy Jimenez for the next 8 or 10 years playing left field. That hasn't gotten better at all, and I'm just wondering when he's going to knock himself out for a good couple of weeks because his eggs are scrambled from hitting the wall. I guess if you don't have anybody else in the system, that's where he's going to be. But
they don't really. I mean, like most of the guys are here. They're at that stage where not quite everyone's here. You know, obviously Andrew Vaughn's not here yet, but most of the guys that are going to be here for the long haul, they're here already. You know, sometimes guys surprise you along the way, you know, especially in the pitching department. That's why I'd be more inclined to see them kind of churn through some of those options they have in Schaumburg, like your Dane Dunnings of the world, and see if they can, you know, find some success there as opposed to dealing a top prospect. But yeah, I mean, I look at it as someone like Zach Collins. It's like, I don't know exactly what it is you do here. You know, he doesn't get enough playing time, and because he's blocked by Abreu, Grandal, McCann. So something's got to give in that regard. There's also that thing that plays into it, too. You know, I don't know if somebody would be willing to take Zach Collins off your hands, but you'd be trading him at his lowest possible value. So they've got issues. They've got a blockage there with your first base DH types. So
and McCann's not going to get you. I mentioned him the other day. I shouldn't have, because he's not going to get you what you need, because he's up after this year. So you're not what team is trading you starting pitching for a catcher? If they were being sellers, they would want someone who was under club control for mm-hmm. more than just the rest of this year. So
right.
James McCann, and unless by some, you know, crazy scenario there's a contender
right.
that has a surplus of starting pitching, which is a very rare thing,
or a big time catcher goes down right before the deadline or something, you know what I mean, like that's the only way you'll be able to get something for
him.
But
that's just that's a stars aligning scenario, right? Like James McCann probably will just be a free agent at the end of this year, and that's okay. Like that's just what it's probably going to end up being. But yeah, it's tough. The Cubs fans, they went through it. They saw it happen. We mentioned the two guys, Eloy and Gleyber Torres. Like you got to be willing. Once you get to this point and you start talking about prospect surplus, you start talking about names. Sure, Zach Collins would be easier to part with. Dane Dunning, you already don't have a ton of pitching. Mike Rodolfo's a guy you mentioned, but the further you go down on the prospect list, the less high of a quality guy you're going to get. You can't keep all of these guys. You have to deal from positions of strength to fill areas of weakness. And if your bullpen is really good and your offense is really good and your starting rotation's really bad, you're going to need to trade from some level of position player depth in order to fill that void.
I think that's right, and I am completely, given how thin they are in the rotation, I am not willing to move anybody out of that bullpen. I thought you were going to say Andrew Vaughn, but I also thought you might have the evil notion of parting with Aaron Bummer, because you can't have him. He is he's an untouchable in my world, and I know that's weird to say about a guy who doesn't close, but that's how valuable I think he is to that baseball team.
Well, Mac, don't you remember last summer when all the Cubs contingent around here, I think Mark Grody was top of the list there, they wanted to trade Ian Happ for Aaron Bummer. I know Ian Happ's having a nice start to the season this year, but even at the time last year, I was like, hey, look, can we try to think of the big picture here? No way, you can't have him. He's ours. There are many like it, but this one's mine.
Grody.
Hey, well, and in this year, too, if starting pitchings are not going to go very deep and you're going to have 28-man rosters, having one of the best bullpens in baseball, it's a massive weapon. And I would not have said that. I would not have thought that the White Sox were going to have one of the best bullpens in the damn sport. But great offense and a great bullpen, that easily could be the formula to winning a World Series this year. Right? I mean, like, do you think the bullpen is that sustainable and that deep, Tanny?
I mean, I like the back end, and if Evan Marshall can keep up what he's doing, I certainly like that dynamic, you know, in your 7, 8, 9, if that's locked in. But the problem is the starting rotation right now. You just don't know. Too many uncertainties there. But, yeah, I mean, give me Bummer in the 8th and Colome from the 9th, and I'll be good with that. But the problem is that next year Colome is gone, so, you know, you have to maybe back – you know, Stoney was on the station today talking about maybe moving Bummer back into the closer's role, saying how not everyone can do it, but certainly it's an option you'll have to look at if you can't find anyone on the open market. But, yeah, I mean, I like the bullpen as is, so I don't want to change any of that right now.
We've got Teddy Greenstein. Oh, I'm sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
No, that was me. Well, sorry,
it was canny.
It was just, yeah, it's a strength for them right now, and you know, sadly, it's because the starting rotation has underwhelmed. But for now, it's one of their strengths. So I would hate to deal from a position of strength, and it's not like they have depth. It's just strong as it is right now.
Huge news day in the Big Ten and across college football. Teddy Greenstein was in the middle of the reporting on it. He'll join us in 15 minutes. I got a quick recommendation for Marquee coming up on The Score. Teddy Greenstein will join us in 10 minutes to figure out if there's going to be any Big Ten football and what's going on in college sports. Mac, I know it's tough to launch a new television network, and a pandemic has interrupted everything, and they're doing these broadcasts remotely. I was sympathizing, empathizing with our guys Len and JD last night, because not only do you have to broadcast a game with, you know, other networks' feeds and not being in the same spot, but Marquee, I think to their credit, hired all of these analysts to make all of this splash. And, you know, some of the guys are not big names, but some of them are. And, like, having Mark Grace a part of Cubs broadcast and bringing him back and having more of a relationship with the organization is legitimately something to be celebrated. But you and I know the difficulties of doing a radio show when we can't see each other from two different locations with just two people. Now, you've got Len and JD in the same place, the baseball game happening in another place, and you try to bring Mark Grace into the broadcast, and Mark Grace isn't in the place where Len and JD are. I don't know. I find it to be a logistical nightmare, and too many times it led to some awkwardness. I know the plan before the year was to do it, and that would be no problem if it was just one guy in one other place, but everyone else was together. I feel like it's just too many plates spinning at once to have a third analyst in a different location.
Yeah, I haven't noticed the awkwardness now. I don't know if you're talking about something specific that you consumed last night. For the most part, last night I was with the White Sox crew and did not give much time to Cubs television. I punched in for scores and I followed the game on my phone without listening to it. But was there an event specific last night that got you thinking about this, or has this been your observation since the beginning?
It was consistent, honestly. It was you know, JD and Mark Grace talking over each other a little bit, or Len needing to tee up Grace. But, you know, what do you think, Gracie? And that sort of thing. Him telling stories that was going over. You know, at bats late in the game, I think in the ninth inning, there was a Jason Hayward at bat where he struck out and Gracie was still telling an anecdote. And it just, I think if they were in the same booth together, the nonverbal communication would have said, hey, this is too big of a moment. Like, let's get some descriptors in there. Right. But it was just half dozen times where it felt out of place and that they needed to kind of halt the flow to go to the guy who isn't in the same location. And I think Mark Grace can add a lot to a broadcast. I loved when we had him on the show, and having him a part of Cubs broadcasts feels big. He's an iconic Cub. But I probably would table it until you could get him in the same place as Len and JD, as opposed to, like, Skyping him in from some other remote location.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more experience. They'll work out some of the kinks. I think it's worth taking a shot at it, because I think he does add a lot of color to the Cubs booth, and certainly one of the more popular players in Cubs history, even though it didn't end well between him and the team. I'll give that a watch tonight to see if I can find it to be as awkward as you have found. But I understand what you're saying. Certainly when you're not in the same place, that makes for what could be a logistical nightmare. And the awkwardness of not wrapping up a story during a critical at bat, that's a timing issue. Maybe they'll talk about it among themselves and say, let's not do that in the ninth inning again. Let's not do that in the bottom of the seventh, which finally they got that situation rectified a few years ago and didn't have those necessary stretch conductor interviews going on in the seventh inning when the Cubs are trailing by a run and they've got the bases loaded and you've got Tom Dreesen telling jokes. They got that figured out finally. Maybe they'll get this thing figured out. I think it's Grace is too valuable of an addition to bail on it completely. So hopefully with more reps, they'll get it to be a little bit more seamless. But I'll be watching for that tonight. I don't know if Mark is going to be a part of the mix tonight, but I'll be watching Cubs TV tonight for that express purpose to see if there's the hiccups that you're reporting.
Yeah, I don't know if he is either. And on the flip side, I will just say also, the graphics on Marquee, I think, are awesome. The way they use StatCast and the Pitch FX technology, and the wind is blowing in this quadrant of the ballpark in this way, and in this part of the ballpark in this way, and just all of the presentation of the game, I think, is national Sunday Night Baseball level quality.
It's fun. I can't watch a whole game.
yeah, that would be hard. I think that stuff, they look like they've been broadcasting baseball games for 20 years with regards to that. I think that they, the situation is just, it's very complicated right now, and so to simplify what you can, given the constraints on the broadcasters, would be my recommendation. But you're right, he's such a big name, they're probably going to use him whenever they can.
Kroll. I liked Kelly Kroll. I thought she was a very good in the field reporter.
I agree. She had very good chemistry with Len and JD also, and the players really respected her. She did a lot of their charity events as an MC, so I thought she added some insight there. That she is very good at her job, and she's now doing it for what, Fox Sports South, I think.
What's your genre of food? If that
I like food.
That's true. I forgot about that. Your favorite genre of food.
You should have asked Kenny Lofton that, and he could have given you a sci-fi movie.
You know kung fu? Teddy Greenstein spoke to the commissioner of the Big Ten today and has been doing reporting all day on the logistical hurdles for college football. We'll talk to him about it next on The Score.
I know kung fu.
Yeah. Oh, you know kung fu?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.